Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you joined me tonight. As most of you know, Shelley, my co-anchor, has taken off for the other side of the pond. She'll be gone until next week. I'm very excited for her. It's her first big excursion like that, and I'm sure she's going to have a wonderful time. We all wish her well, I'm sure. Tonight we're going to talk about one thing that we talk about a lot and about another thing that I've never discussed on the air, although like every other adult in the world, I have discussed it with my family and with my friends because it's stuff that bugs me all the time. But the first thing I'd like to talk about is something that one of my listeners sent to me in regard to a couple ladies who have daughters that have kind of learning disabilities in their in their school. And they're on special education plans, which a lot of kids are doing today, for those of you who don't know that. They do individual education plans for almost all the kids and help them, work toward an end that will be more successful during their school days. Well, both of these young girls have been bullied. And the moms have gone to the Department of Education and ask for help when they have to be homeschooled. They have actually asked for help prior to them being removed from the school in regard to the bullying. And the oldest girl actually was threatened and hurt, and she hit him in self-defense and was suspended. And we've talked about that. We've talked about the fact that the quiet bully who whispers or writes things or does things that are not obvious can sometimes be the worst one, because often nobody believes the child that's being harassed. And apparently that was going on with this. Even some things were done on Facebook and things like that. So she lost her temper and she hit him in self-defense. And she didn't feel safe in the school anymore. So the mom pulled her out. Now, one mom has a 15-year-old and one mom has a 19-year-old. And they both kind of pulled themselves together to find out why. If they can't leave their child in a public school where things like test papers and things like that are paid by the Department of Education, if they have to remove their children because the school can't keep them safe, then why and for what reasons is there no monetary compensation in regard to the extra funds that are going to cost some of these single moms and moms that live on a limited budget to make sure that their child gets a high school diploma? So I'm going to put that out there. I'd like all of you to think about it. If anybody has any feedback, personally, I often wonder why, if something, it's not appropriate to charge for something, why there is a charge for something. If it's a service and somebody's taking up their time, if it's a piece of paper that can be mimeographed or, boy, that's an old word, or copied on a printer or sent over the computer so that you're totally paperless, I don't understand why there's a charge. But that's just my input, especially if the circumstances are like this. Some of the things that we ask people for money for are ridiculous. When, first of all, there you shouldn't be collecting on anything that doesn't have a direct connection with you doing something to it. Something like a test that was written by somebody else who's already been paid for it. Everything is finished and done, and now that we're paperless and people can do things on the computer, and a lot of kids do. But when they go to take the big test, then they have to pay the money for the people that run the classroom or the rent on the classroom or whatever the story is. But I do think this is something that could be remedied, and it shouldn't be such a big deal, and it shouldn't be so difficult for these parents to be able to accomplish it, and people should be have a little bit more empathy for what their plight is. I mean, if they're still struggling to get a 9-year-old her GED and she's still willing to get it, I thought that's what we wanted. I thought that's what we were supposed to be doing, is supporting these kids and getting them to a good place so that the barriers and the obstacles that fall in their way, you know, weren't so tough. So, but I thought when I read that, the topic that I had already chosen for tonight was given to me by my husband. And I said there was someone who was going to call in tonight, and they had to cancel at the last minute. So I pulled up some stuff that I have working on for the future. And one of the things that we talked about is about professionalism. And by professionalism, I mean the way people handle themselves in the workplace. And even though we have talked about bullying in the workplace and jealousy in the workplace and people getting stabbed in the back in the workplace and all those kind of things, this is more along the lines of general behavior in some of the places where a lot of us spend a lot of time. A lot of times we don't have any say on whether we want to be there. We just have to be there because that's where life has sent us. And I've written something that I'm going to read, and then we will talk about it. Normally, we talk, as I said, about topics such as bullying and unkindnesses, such as judgment and prejudices. Even jealousy can bring about poor behavior, so we talk about that every now and then as well. Tonight, I'd like to bring up our noticeable lack of professionalism. I see a lot of it when I research about what we talk about on the show, from parents to bus drivers to teachers to clerks in stores. What has happened to conducting ourselves with decorum and professionalism? Is it possible that this could have something to do with a lot of our group anger? Most certainly, it is a poor leadership for our young people. A lot of business today is conducted in the world of technology. Yet, when you put a check in the bank, it often is not credited to your account until they feel like it, even though with a click of a mouse, they can see the funds are available. I don't get that. I don't even understand why that takes place. How about hospitals? Oh, Lordy. You get to a triage in a relatively short time. Then you wait anywhere from 15 minutes to hours. Then they finally call your name, and then you sit on a bed, if that's what you want to call it, and wait even longer. And when you look around the emergency room, everybody's standing at a computer. And I mean everybody. My husband had heart failure last May. He was in the emergency room for 14 hours. They said there was no beds upstairs. And yet I saw lots of empty beds on the floor he went to when we got up there. But I have to believe that there was a reason why he couldn't go to one of those beds. After his surgery and being with him from 6 a.m. to around 8 p.m. that evening, I went home. When I called his room, there was no answer. Called the nurse's desk. Oh, sorry, Mrs. Brewer. That phone doesn't work, I guess. You guess? So I took a shower, got dressed again, and took off for the hospital. I get there. Here he is in the IC unit. That is intensive care unit, everybody. That's where you're supposed to get the very most attention. His blood pressure was so low that I couldn't believe it, and no one knew. Not the nurse that was supposed to be taking care of him. She was out with her girlfriend sitting at the station having her dinner. He hadn't been brought any water. He couldn't have water for the first few hours, but then he got water and drank some of it. They never brought him anything to eat. By this time, it's about 9:30 at night. So I had to throw my weight around, and if you've ever seen me, you know that that could be very substantial throwing around. And finally got him taken care of, so I felt safe enough to go home. But I also had to make sure that he had a phone that worked in the room, because nobody had done that yet either, so that he could call me just in case something was wrong and nobody else was listening to him. That's pretty sad. Then we have the Department of Motor Vehicles. Well, at least in their defense, everyone comes at once and they all have different situations. But often, a visit to register a vehicle or get a driver's license or anything along those lines can take you 3 to 5 hours, and I know people that have sat even longer than that. This year, I don't know if any of you know about this, but this year people were requested to go to an IRS office. Not everybody, but you know there's been some trouble with the IRS returns. So I know some people who got no money, and when they called to find out why they hadn't gotten their check yet, well, you've got to come to our office on such and such a street and prove to us that you're really this person. Okay, so they go. There's hundreds of people in line. Nobody gets appointments. They just have to get there early enough and get in line. And when you ask, is this the only way that this can be handled? Can I get an appointment? Can we set? No, you just have to come and stand in line, first come, first serve. So when you're notified of this, they tell you you have to come and prove your identity, because it appears as though something is wrong with your return. When you get there, you don't really know what's wrong until you get there. But when you get there, you find out that because of this amazing world of technology, people are stealing our identities. You know, stealing your identity in a world that is run paperless with computers and things like that is something that has to be looked at, and has to be looked at right away by the people who know what they're doing. And I'm sorry, but to let it get to this point is just inconceivable to me. How did we get here? And why is it such a big secret? And why is this the way it's being handled? So you have to stand first place, first come, first serve, 6 to 8 hours. And then if you've stood there for 6 to 8 hours and it's after 4, you get turned away and told to come the next day. And if you find out that someone indeed has been collecting your returns, maybe for more than just this year in some cases, you have the responsibility of reapplying, and you better have every scrap of evidence that might be required under a much closer scrutiny. I find that to be very sad, because I know a lot of people who work hard all year and so depend on that extra little bit of cash flow. The courts and the legal system are so antiquated, and I know this firsthand, that Tom and Jerry could manipulate it. It's a sad, sad, sad state of affairs, believe me. I'm sorry to say I have no real answers or no real solutions, except independent professionalism and responsibility. Exactly what we're trying to teach our kids, isn't it? Isn't that what we want from them? So if it's your job, do it. But do it like you know it needs to be done, please. Do you think we would all be less tense and less angry if some of these businesses or organizations could clean up what it is they're doing, so that our anywhere from 15 minutes to 8 hours in their company wasn't so stressful? Do you think it would cut back on the road rage? Do you think it would cut back on not having any temper left when you get home to deal with a 5-year-old? Do you think it would stop you from going back to your workplace where you're supposed to be kind to everyone else and not being kind? Think about it. Think about it. Some of the places I didn't even mention are places like restaurants. You can go in and spend $150 on dinner for 2 in a lot of beautiful restaurants. I think we all know that. And the service can be so bad and the food can be so mediocre that you leave so distressed. Instead of a beautiful evening, it was just nothing. And then you get, of course, you get buyer's remorse if you're not the kind of person that can really afford a $150 night out. But then you go into another place and spend $20 on you and your friend or even by yourself. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. The waiter or the waitress smiles at you, makes sure that you have everything that you need, actually talks to you like you're important and they're glad that you're there, and makes the whole thing be beautiful and pleasing, and brings you to another level with all of your anxiety. Because once we turn to each other and are nice to each other, it's amazing what can happen to people. A few weeks ago, I did a story about some tests that they did that they showed on television. And people had to have different things done to them or be told to them. So they actually tested, they did like a sonogram of their brain. And when somebody was told that they had cancer, all these areas of red showed up in their brain. And you could see the stress in their blood pressure. And everything changed about their whole body. Everything was under a great deal of stress. So then they tested these same people, telling them the same things, with somebody who they knew cared about them holding their hand. And those little red patches would come up and go away again. I watched that, and I said to myself, I cannot believe how much sense that makes to me. If you go back to the beginning, when you first give birth to a child, or have a child in your life, or hold a child that's fussing, if you're relaxed and you hold that baby relaxes. Why? Because they feel the love. And that's what we have to do with all of our other interactions. You don't have to fall in love with everybody. You don't have to live with everybody. But respect for one another also creates that good feeling, that warm feeling, that place that makes you feel, oh my gosh, this person really cares about me. Is there any other feeling in the whole world that's more wonderful than knowing somebody cares about you? There isn't. There's not another feeling in this whole world that can do the same thing for you as knowing that somebody loves you. So, on that note, when we're in some of these places, you know what Izzy is teaching us? When we do his Wednesday, when we do his Wednesday talk, and we all role play, and we talk about making bullies into buddies, this could work the same way. The people in these places aren't really bullying you; they're kind of indifferent to you, or they're so bogged down by their own stress and anxiety and their job tasks and everything that is expected of them, that they've forgotten what they're there for. So we could turn that around. We could really, really turn that around. We were in a Walmart the other day trying to get a new tire and a battery for one of my sons. Their car had broken down. So my oldest son and I went over to take care of that for them. And three times at the auto part of Walmart. In Walmart, they know me. Believe me, I'm a Walmart shopper, and I'm with this house of 10 people, I'm in there quite a bit. Twice, I picked up this heavy battery and walked to the register where this elderly man was standing and doing a transaction. And the person would walk away, and he would walk away. He never acknowledged me one time. So my son said, maybe he knows we're getting the tire mounted, so he's got to wait until something comes through on his end at the register saying that job is done. I said, oh, well, you're probably right. Okay. So there's a little waiting room, so I go over and I sit down in the little waiting room. In the meantime, somebody puts my battery away that I took off the shelf, and a heavy box of heavy-duty commercial garbage bags. So when my son comes back in and says, Mom, the tire is done, I walk up, no battery and no bags. They've been put away. So we say something to the gentleman. He just totally ignores us. So my son turns around and says to him, hey, are you having a bad day? And it woke this old man up. I mean, on that moment, he realized what he'd been doing. You could see it in his eyes. And we both smiled at him. And he came right over and went over and picked up the other battery and put it back up on the counter and rang us up, and then took all the time he could to explain to us how to get money back on the core and circled all this stuff and did all this extra service after he had totally ignored us for a good 20 minutes. But if my son hadn't said anything to him, and he didn't say it in a mean way, he just said, hey, man, are you having a bad day or something? And the man just turned around, and I think a lot of times that's what's wrong. People are caught up and what is going on for them. And they're really oblivious to what's going on with you. However, that's okay in a Walmart. That's okay in a drugstore. That's okay in a lot of different places. It's not okay when you're in the hospital. It's not okay when you're involved in the court system. It's not okay when you're in a place where your discomfort is somebody else's responsibility and they don't acknowledge it. So again, do you believe that a lot of these things that are taking place out there have a direct connection to our overall behavior? Do you believe that if some of these places were kinder and the experience was a better experience and the connections were better connections with the people that are talking to us, that we could actually generate more of a snowball effect that promotes less anger, less hatred, and certainly less bullying? I think it would. I believe it would. I think that if you walk down the street, we've said this before, let's test this. I do this all the time. Look at people and nod and smile. Sometimes I get a look like, God, I don't know who that is. Wonder why she thinks she knows me. Instead of just thinking that maybe I'm just, you know, acknowledging the fact that our eyes met. It's funny and fun when you do things like that. And sometimes you turn somebody's day, you know, completely around. Completely around just by that little nice thing that you do by, you know, smiling at them and saying hello and opening up an opportunity for them to do the same to you. I do believe that kindness begets kindness, just like I believe anger begets anger. But that's why I love what Izzy has been teaching us, and that is the fact that if one person is angry and the other person has the ability to maintain and look at them and say, why are you mad at me? Even if it's your husband or your wife, what's really wrong? Why are you mad at me? And let them put into words why they're really mad at you. And could be that they're not mad at you at all. Could be that they're mad at the woman at the DMV. Could be that they're mad at the guy that just cut them off in the car. Could be anything that could have happened in the course of a day. But that kind of breaks that wall and opens the door to something that is much more pleasurable than having that in standing between you. If you just say, why are you mad at me? Are you mad at me? Why are you mad at me? I loved that when Izzy said that to us the other night, because he didn't want to say, somebody said, well, if I'd have said, why don't you like me? And he said, no, I don't want you to say, why don't you like me? I just want you to ask them if they're mad at you. Big difference. Big difference. And I think it really works. And I think it will make somebody feel like, you know, they have to think about it. They have to give some thought to what they're doing. And a lot of times, that means everything. It means absolutely everything. Some of the other things that I think are going on out there in the world today have to do, of course, with money and material things and all the things that we think we have to have and all the things that we're pretty sure we know we want and the pressures that it puts on you trying to have everything that the old saying was, you were trying to keep up with the Joneses. Some of you young people may not even know what that means, but it means keeping up with the people that appear to be the most possession-wise successful. Well, I don't blame people for wanting certain things. I don't blame people for wanting a nice home to live in. I think that's a normal thing. I think it's a normal thing to want to have a dependable vehicle, since most of us drive every place we go. I think it's also because of peer pressure for young people. It's important to have the kind of clothes everybody else is wearing. I think all of those things are okay because they've been okay for centuries and centuries and centuries. But I think we push it too far today. I think that things have gotten out of hand in regard to what kids want and what they really should have or need. No 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old needs an iPad. They just don't. I give them an Etch-a-Sketch and let them play with that. And when you find it outside in the rain, you'll know where the iPad is going to be the next time you turn around twice. So a lot of that stuff is happening for all of us, too. And a lot of that stuff is one of the things that causes all the problems with their peers. When a kid has more than everybody else, he's more apt to get bullied depending on what kind of school he's in, what kind of kids he runs with, and what the, you know, what the groups are doing. I do believe that we overdo it for most of our children. All my grandchildren have got a game of some kind, an Xbox or a Wii or something. Do I think they're great entertainment for them? Of course I do. Do I think that they have fun with them and I want them to have fun? Of course I do. Do I think they're really necessary? No, I don't. I like it when I see my grandchildren out in the backyard playing basketball or playing football or swimming in the pool. And the little ones, as far as I'm concerned, need so much more of that energy taken up that it isn't funny. Because I see frustrations in the 6-year-old. If he doesn't get to run and play and get rid of some of that energy, oh my gosh, he's like a bull in a china shop. A bull in a china shop like you've never seen before. He's literally bouncing off the walls if he doesn't get to run some of that energy off. I do think that kids need more exercise. Some schools still have classes where they get to go outside. Now, my 6-year-old grandson, he has a class a couple times a week where they get to do jumping jacks and play harder or exercise harder, I guess I should say. In those days, he's always a lot calmer. By the time he comes home from school, he's always in a better place. So I think that's good for adults as well. Years ago, I had back surgery. And it was kind of traumatic for me because by the time I had it, I could barely walk. And if I was walking and somebody bumped into me, I would just stand there and freeze and cry. It was really, really awful. So I decided to have major back surgery. I had lower lumbar 4 and 5 removed. And nothing is back there now except muscle. And I did everything I was told, but one of the most important things was for me to walk. So I did every day, 3 or 4 times a day. I would walk and walk and walk and walk. And what it did for me, first of all, it helped me heal my back, helped me lose weight. But it also, that walking, also calmed me in a time when I was fretting about money and not working and my house and my kids and all the other things that, you know, responsible adults worry about every minute of every day. And that walking helped me so much. So I do that with the teenagers here. They ride bicycles or they walk, and I tell them, go do that and clear your head. It'll be good for you. And even they realize that it's good for them. I think that exercise is imperative when they're very young. When I was in school, every morning you had an exercise class. And I think it helped everybody think better, cleared their brains, got the feathers out of their heads, and put them in a place where all their plugs were firing and they could do things that they needed to do. And I think that's still important today. I don't know how many schools have discontinued physical education. I know a few have. And if they do have it, it's extracurricular activity. It's something that's done at night. I think that's a shame. Having grown up, I was born in the late 40s. And when I was in middle school, or junior high, they called it back then, Kennedy was president, and he wanted us to be physically fit. He was he did a big thing about us being so unphysically fit. God, if he could see us now, he'd be mortified, I'm sure. But back in that, at that time, there was a big effort to get kids into better physical condition. So you had to do a 600-yard run walk, you had to do a 50-yard dash, you had to do a 75-yard dash, you had to learn how to pole vault, you had to learn how to broad jump, you had to learn how to do relay races, and everybody participated. Unless you were injured in some way or had a major physical disability, you participated. And some were good and some, you know, did it half-heartedly. But what it did for us, and I just had this discussion with somebody that I was in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade with, it kept us calmer. It kept us in a place that was less anxious. So I really, really think it's a good thing. And I think maybe when we talk about bullying laws, which we realize are not working and won't work, I think Izzy's idea to turn people into maybe not the best friend, but certainly somebody that's going to have a little respect and a little, a little compassion for you. I also think that it would be really, really important if